Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today it's drama, and we'll follow that in 30 minutes with an episode of X-1. So we're going to have some adventure in space, no doubt, with an episode from 1955 called First Contact. But now, it's a Screen Guild Theater and Tailored by Tony from 1939.
Welcome, everybody. Tonight, your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer joins the Gulf Oil Companies in presenting another program in this series of reviews, musical comedies, and dramatic shows. All the varied entertainment forms of Hollywood. So welcome all of you to the Motion Picture Star's own program. Welcome to the Gulf Screen Guild Show. With Spring Byington, Edward Everett Horton, Carol Lombard, James Stewart, Oscar Bradley, and Hollywood's favorite master of ceremonies, George Murphy.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another of the Motion Picture Star's own programs, the Gulf Screen Guild Show. Each week, a different type of entertainment presenting a different cast of stars, and all of them written, directed, and acted by the greatest names in the motion picture industry for the benefit of the Motion Picture Relief Fund. Last week, it was a drama. Next week, a review starring Fanny Bryce, Bob Hope, and Martha Ray. Tonight, it's a comedy drama tailored by Tony, directed by Dorothy Arzner and written by Connie Lee, under the musical direction of Oscar Bradley. Tonight, we meet Carol Lombard as Tony Warren, New York's foremost designer of men's clothes. Her mother, Mrs. Warren, is played by Spring Byington. Edward Everett Horton is heard as Kenneth Pickles, her business manager. And Peter Graham, a Greenwich Village author, is played by James Stewart. Lights. Music. Curtain.
Yes? Oh, yes, Mr. Greenleaf. Oh, a lot more padding in the shoulders? Oh, yes, we'll take care of it. No, we don't put any padding in the hips. No, all right, we'll take care of it, Mr. Greenleaf.
What shall I do about Mr. Ramone's pajamas, Tony?
Send the Mare Express to Honolulu. Yes?
Do Mr. Olson's trousers have 18-inch bottoms, Miss Warren?
20 inches. Tell the switchboard not to send any more calls in here. I'm through.
Why, Tony?
Through for the day, Mother. There aren't any real men anymore. Nothing but strutting peacocks and pants.
Why, Tony, some of our clients are very handsome.
Handsome, yes, but put them in bathing suits and see what they look like. Who squares off their round shoulders? Who fills out their caved-in chest? I do, and I'm sick of it.
Miss Warren?
What's the matter now, Pickles?
Have you seen the latest issue of the Gentleman magazine?
No.
Well, Miss Warren, it's outrageous. It's terrible. Just look at this article by that gigolo of the trade, Michael Barbonnet.
Isn't English, Pickles?
I couldn't... Of course it's in English.
Well, then don't worry. Michael speaks with such an accent, no one will understand a word of it.
Mother, what was the article about?
He titles his slanderous essay, "The Well-Dressed Man Prefers the Clothing of a Man, for a Man, and by a Man."
Oh, but he's got it all wrong. It's of the people, for the people, and by the people. I remember distinctly. Washington, wasn't it?
What else does Michael say, Pickles?
He says, Please, Mrs. Warren, please. He says that red-blooded men have an aversion to being pointed out as the clients of a female dressmaker.
Oh, he said that, did he? In hope that some of my customers will wear his unpressed male sex. He announces to the world I'm a female.
Well, I'm afraid that's my fault, Tony. I promised your father a boy. But I was so young at the time. Oh, youth.
Yes, it's too late to correct the mistake now, Mother. Pickles?
What's that?
Where can I find the most atrociously dressed man in New York?
Well, I should say any one of Barbonnet's clients.
Oh, no. Well, you must be an artist, a sculptor, a writer, some undiscovered genius, unknown, unrecognized, uncouth.
Oh, how romantic, Tony.
No, I'll make him successful, and then I'll expose him as a Tony Warren creation.
Oh, an inspiration, a divine inspiration, Miss Warren.
I'll prove it isn't the clothes that make the man. It's Tony Warren who makes the clothes who makes the man.
Who is that by, dear?
By me, Mother. Pickles, where can I get my man?
Why, someone like that ought to live in Greenwich Village. Miss Warren, I think I know the very spot. Spaghetti Joe's.
Get your coat, Mother. Call a cab, Pickles. We're dining Sub Rosa at Washington Square.
I told you we got a vino and a spaghetti. If you no like a spaghetti, you get a vino. If you no like a vino, you get out.
Now, look here, my good man.
We'll all have spaghetti.
Oh, si, signora, three spaghetti.
Just a minute, waiter. Who's the musician at the piano?
Oh, he's a Peter Graham, signora. But he's no musician. He's a right. All the time he's a right place. But nobody want to read what he's a right. It's too bad.
Will you ask Mr. Graham to join us?
Si, signora, I ask.
What? Miss Warren?
Yes, Pickles?
You aren't seriously thinking of taking that man for your experiment.
Why not? He's exactly what I want. He's picturesque.
Oh, my word. He's appalling. You can't do it. Look at that. My sneakers, corduroy slacks, a yellow sweater.
But very handsome.
No tie, no coat. No hat.
And so romantic.
Mother, I am not looking for a movie star. I'm getting a guinea pig. He's got height. He walks well, and if I dress him properly...
Here he comes.
Hello?
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 Well, I guess that sort of cleans up the hellos, doesn't it? The waiter said you wanted to see me.
Yes, sit down, Mr. Graham.
Well, thanks.
This is my mother, Mrs. Warren, and this is Mr. Pickles, and I'm Tony Warren.
Well, not the famous designer of men's clothes.
Yes, and now I have a proposition that might interest you, Mr. Graham. Well, what are you laughing at?
Well, I don't... nothing. I always thought you wore trousers and smoked a pipe or something.
See here. Mr. Graham, I'll have you understand...
Well, if it isn't old Joe Stinkle from Public School 39. That's a small world.
Really? Really, my good man, you've made a mistake. I'm not Joseph Stinkle.
Oh, you are too, Joe Stinkle. You can't kid me.
I certainly am not. My name is Pickles. Pickles, here, there. See? My security, social security card.
No. You're Joe Stinkle.
Are you sure you're not Pickles?
Mother, please.
My dear man, I never saw you before.
Oh. So you're giving me the brush off, eh, Joe? Fine, thanks.
I assure you, I am not Joseph Stinkle. Now go away.
Then where is Joe Stinkle?
Why, there is no Joe Stinkle. He doesn't exist. Go away.
Oh, he doesn't exist, huh? What did you do with him?
I didn't do anything with him.
So you killed him. You killed my old pal, Joe Stinkle. You're a murderer.
Really, Pickles, I think we ought to humor him. We were only fooling you. Why, of course, this is Joe Stinkle.
Why, certainly, yes. Of course, I'm Joe Stinkle, yes.
Then where's the $50 you owe me?
I don't owe you any money.
Oh, a voucher, huh? I'll fix you.
Hey, come on, let's get out here. Here's the side door.
But Mother...
No, come on.
But wait a minute. Where are we going?
Never mind, just keep running.
Wait, will you let go of my arm and stop dragging me around?
Here's the bus. Come on. Come on, catch the rail.
Will you please?
Here, hang on to the rail. You'll break your neck. Now, there. You all right?
Well, what are you, a kidnapper? What about my mother and Pickles?
Oh, they're perfectly safe.
Safe in the middle of a gang fight?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. That fellow starts a brawl every night by pretending he's drunk and looking for Joe Stinkle. That's all.
You mean it was all a gag?
Yeah. Just atmosphere, you know. Visitors in the village like to get something for their money. Nobody ever gets hurt.
Well, of all the lowdown... Conductor!
Yes, ma'am?
Stop the bus. I'm getting off.
Oh, yes, conductor. We're both getting off.
Then I'm staying on.
Yeah, we'll stay on,
but... Hey, look, folks, will you please make up your minds? We got a schedule to keep.
All right, start your old bus, but I'll find a seat on the upper deck alone.
Hey, she seems kind of upset.
Yeah, she... Look, I don't know much about girls. How long has it taken to cool off?
Grant's tomb.
What?
Grant's tomb. I've been on this run 10 years and I'm an authority. There's something about riding along by the Hudson in the moonlight that breaks down even the most stubborn.
Oh, it must be awfully late, Peter.
Oh, no. Oh, but that sign on the Jersey Shore will flash the time in just a minute.
Isn't it funny?
What?
Well, the way things happen, you know, when I got up this morning, I never thought I'd sit on the steps of your Grant's tomb and be kissed in the moonlight. Peter?
Yeah?
Look, darling, the sign says 5 after midnight. I've got to go home.
Well, if you do, you'll break the spell. You'll become Tony Warren Incorporated again. You forget you were ever riding up Riverside Drive on top of a magic coach with a guy in a yellow sweater.
But Peter, we can't sit here till morning.
Well, why not? Did you ever see those towers when the sun comes up?
Did you?
Yeah, sure. My first morning in New York. I slept the night before on a park bench with a bunch of play manuscripts as a pillow. Yeah, I guess that was all they were good for.
No one liked them, Peter?
Like them? Well, I couldn't even get into manager's offices.
Do you mind if I tell you why?
Look, Tony, darling, you can tell me anything.
Do you know why I asked you to our table?
Oh, yeah, of course, my fatal charm.
No, because you were one of the worst-dressed men I've ever seen.
Oh, well, thanks.
Now, I've hurt your feelings.
Oh, no. Only, what'd you plan to do? Sort of exhibit me in your window as a horrible example or something?
No, I wanted to dress you up and introduce you to the right people, and then if you became a great playwright, I'd say it was all due to my tailor.
Oh, so you were interested in my commercial value.
But Peter, dear, now I'm interested in you, and I want you to be a success. I want to help you, and will you let me?
No. No, we Vermonters don't accept help from strangers.
But I'm not a stranger.
Of course, if you were, no. No, you wouldn't consider that.
Wouldn't consider what?
Well, if you were, no, you wouldn't do that.
Wouldn't do what?
Well, you wouldn't do it. I mean, did you ever think about getting married?
No, why should I?
Well, why shouldn't you?
Because I'm perfectly happy just as I am. I've worked hard, made a place for myself. Why should I give it up just to marry some man?
Well, not some man. You see, I'm the guy who's asking.
You're asking? You mean Peter, darling,
Yeah, sure. Now, look. New York's no good for me. I don't know. I just don't fit. But I got a farm up in Vermont. I want you to go back there with me. Will you, Tony?
I can't, Peter.
Why?
I don't think I'm the kind of a wife you want. I love New York, being somebody. I couldn't live in Vermont. I'd have to wash dishes and get your meals and all the other things. And well, in 2 weeks, I'd go crazy. And darling, so would you.
Well, don't you think that maybe...
Peter, I'm Tony Warren. I want to stay Tony Warren. I couldn't give it up. I just couldn't give it up.
Oh. Well, I guess it wouldn't work.
No, it wouldn't work, Peter.
No, I... Would.
Well, you'd better take me home.
Yeah, I better. Steps sure get hard.
You were right about the spell, Peter. It's fading before morning.
Yeah. It's late. Here comes a bus. Maybe we better get it, huh?
Yes, it doesn't look like a magic coach anymore. It's just a big green bus.
Yeah, it does.
Watch your step, please.
Peter.
Yes, Tony.
We can't let it end this way.
Come on, buddy. You're getting on the bus or staying off?
Look, I guess I could stay in New York.
No, I'll go to Vermont with you.
No, but I couldn't let you do that.
What can we do?
Make up your mind. The suspense is killing me.
Who? Now, listen, Tony, we'll both give up something. I'll give up Vermont, and you just give me a few hours a day.
Will it work, Peter?
It's got to work. We'll make it work.
You know, we're crazy to try it, but Peter, we'll be happy.
Be happy? Tony, we are happy.
And so is the Fifth Avenue Bus Company, buddy. Service is now resumed.
So the curtain falls on the first act of our comedy, Tailored by Tony, starring Carol Lombard, James Stewart, Spring Byington, and Edward Everett Horton. And now, just a word from John Conte.
Right in your neighborhood, perhaps just around the corner, there is a Gulf station operated by a fellow citizen. He's ready to serve you courteously and promptly with fine automotive products. He maintains a clean, attractive station, and you will find it a pleasure to patronize this local independent businessman. If you are not now using Gulf products and enjoying good Gulf service, we hope you'll stop at the sign of the orange disc the next time you need gasoline or motor oil. We know you'll like the many free services, and better still, we know you'll like the way your car performs with good Gulf products.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the curtain is about to rise on the second act of the comedy drama Tailored by Tony, starring Carol Lombard, James Stewart, Spring Byington, and Edward Everett Horton. Lights. Music. Curtain.
Oh, how does Miss Warren ever cook anything in this kitchen? Good heavens, the cauliflower. Quick, put some water on the cauliflower.
Oh, where's the sprinkling can?
Oh, no, the cauliflower. It's in a pan. It's on the stove.
Oh, how stupid. It'll never grow there. It's much too hot.
Really, Mrs. Warren, would you please get out of the kitchen? How can I get dinner if you... Oh, don't. Please, don't try to bone the anchovies. You see, you've ruined the salad.
Well, you must let me help you, Pickles. I can do the most surprising things with practically nothing at all.
I'll take your word for that.
Mother! Pickles! Woo!
In here, Tony. Pickles is helping me get dinner.
Helping?
Am I late? Has Peter come home yet?
No, Miss Warren, he hasn't. Thank heaven you've come. If your mother doesn't stay out of the kitchen, well...
Hush, Pickles. Tony... Is Peter always this late? I should think on his anniversary.
Don't worry, darling. He'll be home tonight. You know, he's awfully busy with his play. It opens in 3 weeks.
That's right. And I do hope it's a success so he can pay for the clothes we've loaned him.
Who's playing the lead?
Anne Prentice.
Oh, really? Well, I imagine you won't be seeing much of Peter during the rehearsals.
No, but I can't complain. He has his career. I have mine. That was our agreement.
Of course. An ideal arrangement.
Excuse me. I'll be right back. Hello?
Hello, darling. Look, I won't be able to get home for dinner. You don't mind, do you?
No. No, of course not. Only it was last night and the night before, too. Peter, this is our...
Yeah, but I've got to go over some changes in the second act with Anne Prentice, and she lives way up on 86th Street.
Oh, I see. Well, of course, that's very important.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'll see you tomorrow, darling. Goodbye.
Bye.
Was that Peter, Tony?
Yes, we don't need to wait dinner for him. He doesn't know when he'll be home. More coffee? Coffee.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
The morning paper is interesting as usual?
Yeah, I guess so.
What's the weather?
Weather? I don't know. Let's see. Well, it's fair and warmer. So why?
Some friends asked me to run up to Saratoga to the races. You don't mind?
No. I won't be home anyway. Anne Prentice wants me out in Long Island. It's rewrites in the second act.
Second act should be a wow.
Yeah, well, I've got a rush. I'll see you later, darling. So long.
So long.
Author of Summer's End, now in rehearsal, can be seen nightly at the Sky Room in company with Anne Prentice, star of the show and rumored to be. Summer's End by Peter Graham was a flopperoo at the Washington tryout last night. Rewrites may help, but our Beau Brummel Graham is the glamorous Anne Prentice on a heart-to-heart contract.
Peter Graham-Tony Warren partnership is rumored close to the rocks. Graham's play opens at the Imperial Theater, New York, next Tuesday night, and advance reports are...
So nice of you to come backstage, Miss Warren.
Oh, thank you, Miss Prentice. I believe you've met my mother and Mr. Pickles.
Yes, how do you do?
Oh, yes, we've met. How do you do? Hello, Peter.
Hello. A nice opening, wasn't it?
Oh, beautiful. We had such lovely seats, Peter.
Didn't we? So comfortable. Oh, so comfortable. I almost napped a couple of times.
It was so thoughtful of you to remember, Peter.
Oh, that's all right. Did you think the audience was a little cold?
Why, yes, it seemed as though every one of them had a cold. They coughed and sneezed all through the last act.
Did you like the play, Miss Warren?
Oh, yes, indeed. It was splendid and deep, too.
Oh, wasn't it? Wasn't it deep? Yes, I should say it was positively abysmal. What was the second act about, Peter?
Oh, what does it matter, Pickles? It's all make-believe anyway. I did think the music between the acts was delightful, Peter. Simply delightful.
Oh, thanks very much. I didn't write that.
Oh, too bad.
Anne was swell, wasn't she, Tony?
Oh, yes, she was. Well,
I think
you know,
Oh, that second-hand gown of yours is really a triumph, Miss Prentice.
Oh, thank you. So sweet of you, darling.
Yes, indeed. It looked lovely on you, Miss Prentice. Positively lovely. The moment you walked on the stage, the audience knew you were George's mother.
I play George's wife, Mr. Pickles, not his mother.
Oh, imagine that. Well, isn't that stupid, all these managers? Why, you're perfect. You're perfect for the mother.
You know, Pickles will have his little joke. You mustn't take him seriously, Miss Prentice.
No, of course not. Very funny. Well, did you think the critics went for it, Tony?
Went for it? Oh, of course they did.
Oh, yes, Peter, I counted four. The way they went for something after the first act and never came back.
Yeah, well, maybe it was over their heads, you know. You can't give them such good stuff.
No, they don't appreciate fine writing, Peter.
Where was that? You mean in the program? Oh, yes, that was an excellent article on tropical fish.
Well, suppose we all toast the success of Peter's play. Oh, that'd be nice, don't you think so, Tony?
Oh, yes, wonderful.
You get the glasses, Peter, darling.
Oh, sure, honey.
Thank you, precious. Miss Warren?
Please. Oh, that's plenty, dear.
And you, Mrs. Warren? Oh, thank you, darling. Ah, that's enough, dear. Mr. Pickle?
Yes, honey. I mean, Miss Prentice, yes, that's sufficient. Oh, thank you so much.
Peter, sweet, will you? Oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'm so sorry, darling. It's fine, Bill. I hope I haven't ruined your suit.
No, that's all right. It doesn't matter. I never liked this suit.
Pardon me, you what?
I said I didn't like the suit.
That's what I thought you said.
Well, so what?
So that settles it.
Well, settles what?
I'm fed up with this sweetheart and darling routine. Let's take our hair down and say what we really think.
Miss Warren.
Shut up.
Now, wait a minute. Don't tell her to shut up.
Then don't say you don't like the suit I made.
Well, I don't like the suit.
You don't like anything about the suit.
No, I don't even like the buttons.
Nor the buttonhole.
I hate buttonhole.
Well, that's just fine. I can fix it for you.
Well, wait. Let go of that
Maybe
suit.
Maybe the tails are too long.
Tony, what are you,
and
crazy?
And hell. Get out. Get out.
Well, look, somebody do something.
Maybe the waist is too small. Get out or I'll call the police. We're getting out. Only I've got one thing to say first.
Nah, I'll say it for you. We're finished.
You're darn right we're finished.
I don't know why we ever got married anyway.
I second the motion. You're a clothes horse, a stuffed shirt, and your play is a flop.
All right. Can you think of anything else?
Sure, but I'll put it on a poster card from Reno. Oh, is that you, Pickles? The two bags in the hall are ready, but... Oh.
Hello.
Hello, Peter.
I'm not... butting in on anything, am I?
No, I just came up to get some things before the apartment was closed.
Yeah, that's what I came up for, too.
Well, just go right ahead.
Sure, I won't bother you. I could come back.
No, I'm almost finished. Things are pretty dusty.
Yeah, they aren't. You know, I had some shirts here someplace.
In the bottom drawer of the bureau.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the bottom drawer. You go right on with your packing now. Don't let me hold you up.
Well, I am in a hurry. My train leaves in an hour.
Mm-hmm. Look, Tony, have you seen my slippers?
Yes, they're under the bed.
Where? I don't see them.
On your side?
Oh, yeah. My side. Funny me looking over there with them. It's maybe because I always used to stop on that side to kiss you goodnight.
Yes. Oh, the snake plant. I don't know what to do with that.
Oh, yeah. What are we going to do about that? That it certainly needs water, doesn't it? Remember the night we got that? Went down to the dime store to buy a lot of pots and pans and gadgets. It certainly is a silly-looking thing, isn't it?
Isn't it? It's beautiful.
I know. Whoever saw an elephant with a plant growing out of his back? But you said the elephant was good luck in the house.
We named him Jumbo. You won't give it to the janitor.
Oh, no. But, Tony, look, I think you ought to have Jumbo. After all, I bought him for you.
All right. I'll take him with me.
To Reno?
Why not? Is there anything wrong in that?
No. It's swell.
Well, I guess I've got everything.
You sure?
Yes. Bye, Tony. Peter.
Goodbye, and I wish you luck.
I wish you luck, too. Oh!
Jumbo.
Oh, I dropped him. Oh, Peter, he's broken. Everything's broken. You, me, us, everything.
Oh, Tony, now don't, please. Listen to me, Tony. I love you. I'll always love you.
Peter.
Look, Jumbo can be fixed. Just,
A little glue, he'll be okay, and we can be fixed too, Tony, honest. A little understanding, a little forgiveness. Well, we'll never be able to tell where the break was.
Peter, do we dare try it again?
Look, Tony, did you keep my yellow sweater?
Yeah, and the sneakers.
Hey, you were right about my play. Oh, wasn't it awful?
Well, you can write another.
I could in Vermont.
Oh, I love Vermont. You know, I'm tired of New York. I'm tired of being Tony Warren. Peter, I just want to be your wife.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
Just you and me.
You and me and Jumbo. God bless him.
Now, before the cast takes their curtain call, just a word from John Conti.
Thank you, George. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you've enjoyed tonight's Gulf Screen Guild show. The Gulf Oil Companies and your independent good Gulf dealers who bring you this program want to give you tops in radio entertainment, just as it has always been the Gulf policy to give you tops in service and in products. Take Gulf No-Nox Ethyl Gasoline, for instance. Gulf No-Nox has the highest anti-knock rating available to the American motorist. Gulf No-Nox is just what its name implies, a really knock-proof motor fuel. It ends that pinging, chattering sound that you hear in your motor when you accelerate rapidly or drive up a hill. And when you eliminate motor knocks, you also eliminate an important cause of motor trouble and therefore repair bills. So try a tank full of Gulf No-Nox Ethyl. We hope you'll like the performance of this outstanding knock-proof gasoline, just as we hope you've enjoyed the performance of the outstanding film stars that we bring you in these Gulf Screen Guild shows.
Thank you, Oscar Bradley, and thank you, John Conti. And special thanks to Spring Byington, Edward Everett Horton, Carol Lombard, and James Stewart for your swell performances here tonight.
Well, thank you very much, and good night, George.
Good night, Eddie.
Good night, George.
Good night, Spring.
Good on. So long, too, George. It was a lot of fun. You know, George, I wish I could look like one of those arrow collar fellas, you know, but my clothes just don't seem to hang right on me, you know?
Oh, you're just self-conscious, Jimmy.
No, not at all. Now, look at this. Now, that's a good piece of material. I feel it. It's okay. But there's just something wrong with it, you know?
Oh, you don't like it, huh?
No.
Well, you know, Jimmy, I think I can fix it for you.
Oh, no, you don't. Oh, wait a minute.
Come back here. I won't do anything.
Oh, no, I'm not taking any chances. Come on, so long, George.
So long, Jimmy. Now, there you are, Kara. To see what you've done, you scared Jimmy away.
Well, George, as I was saying...
Oh, no, you don't. No, I like my suit fine. It's wonderful. It's paid for, free and clear, no liens. There's nothing wrong with it. I like it.
No, George, what I really wanted to say was that you've been a grand host.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
And speaking for the rest of the cast, we've loved working just as much as we've enjoyed listening to your Sunday evenings to our friends and other Screen Guild shows.
Thank you, Carol, and it was swell of you to be here. Grand show. Next week, same time, same station. The good Gulf dealer in your neighborhood joins the Gulf Oil Companies in welcoming you to another Gulf Screen Guild show with a review starring Fanny Bryce, Bob Hope, and Martha Ray. Until then, this is George Murphy saying thank you for the motion picture industry and for the Gulf Oil Companies. And good night.
We are grateful to MGM for George Murphy, for Jimmy Stewart, who had just finished Ice Follies of 1939. Carol Lombard may now be seen in the Selznick release, Made for Each Other. This is John Conte speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Before we get to X-1, let's wander down the halls of NBC in New York. Let's look in at The Big Show with Tallulah Bankhead from 1950.
Well, darling, I suppose you've noticed something unusual about our big show today. So far, there have been no women, a present company accepted, of course. But we are just about ready to make up for it. What with Deborah Carr and Dawson McGuire on our show. Oh, what am I doing? There's still another man whom I haven't presented, and what a man.
You know I'm here, Tulu. I've already been on.
Not you, Bob. I'm talking about Frankie Lane.
Well, what's so special about him? Let's skip Lane and get to the girls.
Hey, Dean, look who's sitting there. Two big movie actresses.
Well, don't get excited, Jerry. So are we.
We're movie actresses.
Are you through, crew? Say, don't crowd, fellas. There's enough here for everybody.
Well, thank you, darling.
And one left over for somebody.
Two girls and three boys. It don't come out even, so I'll choose first.
No, you hold it, Jerry. I'll take Deborah Carr.
Now it's one girl and two boys. Amy Meany, Miney Meyer. I will choose Dorothy McGuire. Okay, Dorothy? Dean, I don't think she likes me.
Ah, don't be silly, Jerry. Of course she does. I think you're a handsome, intelligent, attractive young man. I think you're real nice.
So if you like me, you take me out.
I'll tell you what, Germ. You and I'll take Deborah.
Oh, yummy. I'll take Dorothy McGuire. Okay, fellas, we're all set to take the girls out after the show. Pass the sense in.
Now, just wait a minute. I've been standing here listening to this juvenile Casanovian drivel with ill-concealed contempt. Using this show to divide up two lovely ladies is a disgusting display of ill manners and bad taste as I have ever seen.
Hello, Miss Bankhead.
Ah, Frankie Lane, darling. We're just in time, Frankie. We're just in time. Three of us couples are going out after show.
Okay, I'll take Dorothy McGuire.
She's spoken for, darling.
So, okay, I'll take Deborah Carr.
Sorry, someone's taking her. Well,
Well, I could call my wife. Maybe she'll want to go.
Isn't he sweet? Well, what about me?
Well, if my wife can go, we'll need a babysitter.
What? Sing your song, Lane.
Okay, I'm going to live till I die. Meredith, if you please. If you're troubled by the blues, wise up before you reach the end. Oh, don't be so unhappy, my friend. Be like me. I'm gonna live till I die. I'm gonna laugh instead of cry. I'm gonna take the town and turn it upside down. I'm gonna live till I die. They're gonna say, what a guy. I'm gonna play for the sky. Ain't gonna miss a thing. I'm gonna have my fling. I'm gonna live till I die. The blues will lay low. I'll make them stay low. They'll never trail over my head. I'll be a devil till I'm an angel. But until then, hallelujah, gonna dance. Gonna fly. I'll take a chance riding high. Before my number's up, I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live till I die. You gotta laugh instead of cry. You gotta play for the sky.
You gotta sing and have your sing.
I'm gonna laugh.
He's gonna laugh.
I'm gonna play.
He's gonna play.
I'm gonna sing,
smile,
dance, and live.
Smile, dance, and live.
till I die. I'm gonna laugh instead of cry. I'm gonna take the town and turn it upside down. I'm gonna live, live, live till I die. They're gonna say what I got. I'm gonna play for the sky. Ain't gonna miss a thing. I'm gonna have my fling. I'm gonna live, live, live till I die. The blues will linger so low. I'll make them feel so low. They'll never trail over my head. I'll be a devil till I'm an angel. But until then, hallelujah, gonna dance, 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 gonna fly. I'll take a chance riding high. Before my number's up, I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live, live, live till I die.
Live, live, live until I die.
Before my number's up, I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live, 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 live until I die.
And now it's off to space with X-1 and First Contact from 1955.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, First Contact, by Murray Leinster. They had been in space 6 months now, moving with the incredibly faster-than-light speed of the overdrive. In 6 months, they had gone from Earth outward and outward to the crab-like nebula with the twin stars. A routine flight of exploration and scientific research.
Solid object about 90,000 miles away, sir.
Located, Dort, exactly. Identify it.
A small object, sir. Captain, I've never seen anything like this before. Whatever it is out there is coming toward us at an incredible speed and retreating to zero just as rapidly.
What's the mass of the object, Dort?
Well, it varies with the distance from us, sir.
Step up the scanners.
Nothing, sir. Absolutely nothing shows out there. And yet there must be something. Those alarms are foolproof.
Action stations. Man all weapons. Condition of extreme alert in all departments immediately.
Captain, what is it?
Dort, I ran into the same thing once before on the Earth-Mars run. We were being located by another ship, and their locator beam was the same frequency as ours. Every time it hit, it registered as something solid and monstrous.
But, Captain, we're the only Earth ship in 18 light years around. How?
I didn't say it was another Earth ship out there, Dort.
Another race?
That's right. There's a spaceship out there, all right. But it's not manned by human beings.
It had been contemplated and speculated upon. Mathematically, it was almost a certainty that such a race existed. But in 18,000 Earth years, no human spaceship had ever encountered them. Now the situation was precipitated. And somewhere outside the Earth vessel, there was an alien race. Of what shape? Of what quality? Of what psychology?
It's moving, sir. Heading right for us.
At that speed, we'll be in touch in 10 minutes. Heading right for us, huh? Just what we'd do if a strange ship appeared in our hunting grounds. friendly? Well, maybe. We'll try to contact them. We have to do that. But friendly. Thank the Lord for the blasters.
They may not be hostile, sir. Well,
they may be. That's what I'm paid for, put on this job for, to worry about the troubles that may never happen. To all hands, now hear this. A ship is approaching, manned by an alien race. I'll give the signal for attack or defense if it be necessary. There'll be no move made unless I give the order. I do not wish to provoke trouble. Stand by.
Their ship is slowing down, sir. It stopped.
Weapons Department, report. Weapons Department, report.
Alien ship remarked. Target fixed. Weapons alert.
Communications Department, report. Communications Department, report.
We're receiving a modulated short wave, sir. Frequency modulated. Apparently a signal. Not enough power to do us any harm.
We'll try to make some sense out of it. Report any progress to me immediately.
One thing in their favor, sir. They didn't attack immediately without question. They're trying to establish contact. That seems to indicate they're reasonable.
We'll see, we'll see. What are they doing now? Can you make out the locator screen? Bring that power up.
They're doing something now, sir. There's a section of the hull opening. Probably an airlock, sir.
If they breathe there.
Yeah, they're letting something out. It's round. A bomb, sir?
Unknown object released from alien ship. Observed by weapons department and targeted.
Stand by.
See what they're doing, sir? They've left the object out there right where they were. And now they're withdrawing the ship.
There's no reason why that object couldn't be a bomb, Mr. Dort. Intended to let us think precisely as you're thinking right now.
I just have a hunch, sir. I think they're friendly. I think whatever it is out there is a means of communication.
You're probably right, but I won't gamble the ship on a probability.
Sir, I'd like to volunteer to go out there and look that thing over.
You understand whoever does examine it is expendable.
Yes, sir.
Requisition a lifeboat.
If it's all right with you, sir, I'd prefer just a suit with the drive in it. It's smaller and the arms and legs won't make me look like a bomb. And I'll carry a scanner, sir.
You may leave when you're ready.
Thank you, sir.
I'm all ready. Clear the lock and let me out. Weapons Department reporting to the captain. Mr. Dort located. Mr. Dort is targeted.
Stand by. If that object out there is a device to capture one of our people for observation and questioning, it'll be blown out of existence, including Mr. Dort. Stand by. Mr. Dort. Mr. Dort. Report.
Object, as you can see on the scanner, sir, is covered with many small horns, like the detonating horns of the obsolete mines formerly used in naval warfare.
Is that their purpose, do you assume, Mr. Dort?
I'm going to find out, sir. I'm going to grab one.
Mr. Dort?
I'm here, sir. I don't think this is a mine.
Circle it so we can see it completely through your scanner.
Deadlock, sir. Nothing to report that the scanner hasn't shown you. Oh, wait a minute, sir. A section of the outer hull seems to be opening. Do you see it?
Very good, Dort. Hold that.
I'm sure it's a communications device, sir.
It looks like it. Fix your scanner so it'll focus on that communications device. Return to the ship.
Communications Department. Communications Department. Progress report, please.
We've established communication, sir.
Is there a psychologist on the team down there with you?
Yes, sir. Mr. Burns is working with us.
Will both of you please report to the bridge at once?
Now, you look tired, Dort.
We've established fairly satisfactory communication, sir. They seem to have highly developed thought patterns. We got a satisfactory translation from the machine on the fourth attempt. We can say almost anything we want to say to each other now. Of course, how much of what they tell us is the truth, we have no way of knowing.
Mr. Burns, you're the psychologist. What do you think?
Well, I don't know, sir. They seem to be completely direct. They haven't let slip even a hint of the tenseness we know exists. They act as if they were setting up a means of communication for friendly conversation, but, well, there's an overtone that...
Yeah. Well, Mr. Burns, I have a decision to make. On the one hand, opening contact with the friendly people of a vastly different culture could only be beneficial to us of Earth. On the other hand, if they're hostile, I ought to blast them out of existence without any other preliminaries.
Oh, but, sir, you can't...
I'm not talking to you, Dort.
It's not warranted yet, sir.
Yes. Now hear this, all departments. Hear this, all departments. This ship is on an extended alert. Provisions will be made so that personnel can have maximum rest and nourishment.
Communication continued by means of the artificial language set up arbitrarily between the Earthman and the aliens, decoded by the mechanical decoders. Dort disobeyed orders. He lived on powerful stimulants so that he could stay with the communications machine. Talking, talking, talking to the aliens.
Other people, are we being received?
We are receiving your message.
The chief of this ship wishes to speak with the chief of your ship.
The message is heard by the chief of this ship. The chief of this ship communicates that he will hear the message of the chief of that ship.
Go ahead, sir.
People of the other ship, I'd like to say the appropriate things about this first contact of two dissimilar civilized races, and of my hopes that a friendly intercourse between the two peoples will result.
People of that ship, what you say is all very well, but is there any way for us to let each other go home alive?
That's all, sir. They've stopped sending.
Very direct people. Very direct.
But, sir, I don't follow. I didn't know what that meant. You know, is there any way for us to let each other go home alive?
It means what it says, Dort.
Sir, what's to stop us from just cutting communication and leaving, and they can do likewise?
What's to stop us? Simply that whichever ship leaves first will be followed by the other. If they find Earth and get back to their own planet and we don't know where that planet is, Earth will be completely at their mercy. If they leave first, we'll follow them. We'll attempt to find their home planet. Dort, could you swear to any decision that the policymakers on Earth will come to?
Sir, even if they do follow us, the closer we get to home, the more of our ships and weapons they'll face. They'd never get away.
Well, how do you know that they can't communicate with their home planet without returning?
We can't, sir.
How do you know they can't?
They don't, sir.
So that's the situation. We'll sit out here, facing each other, trying to outguess each other, until time wears us out, and we'll have to face the fact. Either they destroy us, or we destroy them. Navigation officer, attention. Navigation officer, attention. Every star map on this ship is to be prepared for instant destruction.
The chief of this ship wishes to know whether the chief of that ship can suggest an answer to the problem concerning us both.
Do you want me to answer that, sir?
I'll answer it myself. Tell me when to talk.
Now, sir.
I am giving that matter personal attention. Every effort will be bent to the solution of this problem. Will you consider a temporary truce in the meantime?
What would a truce gain? Could we trust you? Would you trust us? I suggest that we continue as we have up to this particle of time.
I agree. Sign off, Doug.
Weeks went by, and during the weeks, the exchange of information continued without let-up.
What particle of time are the people on that ship at?
The resting time. All rest except myself and others on alert duty.
Same on this ship.
You people of that ship are very similar in many ways. Do you have a family?
I have a mate.
I have a mate and three offspring. It is too bad for them, as well as us, to have to kill each other.
This ship can't see any way out of it. Can that ship?
If we could believe each ship, yes. Our chief would like it. But we can't believe you, and you are afraid that we do not tell truth, although we do. This ship would trail you home if this ship were able to. That ship would do the same. But this ship feels sorry about it.
I believe you're a friend.
I share your belief and like you. But there is a possibility that you were put to make a trap for me. I will stop now and think it over. ¶¶
sit down, Dort. Control yourself. We're all under tension. Doesn't do any good to pace like some caged animal.
Yes, sir.
All right, now, I've read the complete transcription of your conversations with this one alien. What does it prove, Dort?
Sir, these people are so much like us, and they're thinking... Well, sir, they're likable.
They're likable, and they breathe oxygen. Their air is 28% oxygen instead of 20. But they could do very well on Earth. It would be a highly desirable conquest for them. Dort, I'm as set against violence as you are. I don't see any way out of this. And I think we've got to break this status quo. So if in 70 hours we don't see any other way, then I have no further choice. I'll blow them to bits.
Receive communications. Will that ship receive communications?
This ship is listening.
It seems to me better to communicate than to sit by the machine silently.
I would have called you, but you signed off before.
The problem goes around and around. I find no answer.
Perhaps we could turn our thoughts to other things.
The psychologist of this ship tells us that you people on that ship have a threshold of tolerance to tension. He tells us that you will be forced to take one action or another in a period of less than 100 time particles.
I have no communication on this matter.
Well, the ship is not trying to extract unwilling information from that ship. A truth is mentioned in passing.
A report of this conversation will be carried to the chief of this ship.
It would be so. We are prepared.
If only the people of this ship could meet in direct contact with the people of that ship, it might be better.
We could not communicate then. The communications machine is too large to carry from place to place. In direct contact, the peoples of the two ships would be further apart than now.
That's true.
I am sad. Much that is pleasant has passed between us.
I am sad, too.
We are not yet ready for each other.
We are not yet ready for each other.
It's hard, isn't it, Doc?
Well, Captain, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were here, sir.
I've been here for quite a while. Eavesdropping, I'm afraid.
It's all right, sir. Nothing can be personal in a situation like this.
Yeah, that's right. How long is 100 time particles, Doc?
Pardon, sir?
That reference he made to us not being able to stand tension is interesting. Their psychologists seem to make more out of us than we do out of them, don't they?
Yes, sir. They hit the nail right on the head.
Yes, they did. I think, Dort, we'll just have to push our timetable up a bit. No further communication with the aliens under any circumstances. That's clear, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Sir, if they know so much about our psychology, isn't it possible that remark was intended to make us act more quickly?
Probable, Dort. Probable.
Why would they do that, sir? Why?
You tell me why, Dort.
All of a sudden, I have an idea, sir. It's crazy.
It doesn't matter how crazy. I'll listen to it.
Sir, I think these people are playing some kind of a joke on us.
Joke? A joke, Dort?
Yes, sir. Over and over again, I've noticed what I think is a sense of humor. A highly developed sense of humor. Do you recall when we went to all the trouble to set up a fictitious star map and then they just sent us back a mirror image of the same one? I think somehow they're playing a joke on us.
Maybe you're right. In which case, you've seen practical jokers, Dort. Their jokes aren't always funny. Sometimes they hurt people. All departments, man, instant alert. All departments, man, instant alert. Report instantly. Report instantly.
Weapons department alerted.
Target, the enemy ship.
On target, sir.
Stand by. Fire!
They're gone, sir. Not a trace of them left. Not a tiny trace. Now we can go home.
Thank you.
Communications to Captain.
Report.
Sir, I'm picking up new signals. Same frequency as the original alien signals.
That's impossible. That ship was destroyed.
I'm receiving signals, sir.
Set the machine up. We'll be down there in a minute. Mr. Dart, come with me, please.
It's good to be on the way home.
Yes, it is good.
Do you suppose we'll ever figure out what happened to the other ship?
Never. A blinding flash and they were gone.
I suppose they couldn't figure a way out of the situation. An unstable people. They had no sense of humor to cope with the situation. They exploded themselves out of existence.
It seems reasonable.
They must have had powerful weapons to destroy themselves so completely.
Yes, what a shame.
In a way, I grew to like them.
This isn't meant for us, sir. I don't know what's happening, but I think we're overhearing a private conversation.
I understand, Dora. Be quiet, will you?
Many things might have come out of a relationship with that people.
They were describing a disease they call cancer. I think it is similar to the Fogren syndrome. We might have helped them.
They might have helped us, too. Well, too bad. We'll never find them again, I think. The odds of such a chance meeting in the vast space of the whole universe. There are no figures for such odds, are there?
Turn it up, Dort. Turn it up louder.
That's all there is, sir. The signal stopped there. Sir, I don't know how, but somehow when we fired at them, we didn't destroy them, but we did set up a condition whereby they've become invisible to us and we've become invisible to them.
Captain to engineering department. Halt forward motion.
Captain, why are we stopping?
Listen, Dort, you say they're invisible. They are, but they're not destroyed because we just heard them. They're out there somewhere. Invisible.
Well, you heard them, so they're heading for home. We're invisible to them too, sir.
How do you know, Dort? How do you know this whole thing isn't a setup?
Suppose that's true, Captain. You heard their conversation. They weren't talking like any monstrous people. They seemed decent and warm, just as decent and warm as we are.
How do you know this conversation wasn't planted, deliberately set up for us to hear? How do you know that, Dort?
Yes, sir, you're right. They may be out there and they may not. They may be telling the truth or they may be trying to trick us. They may be friends or they may be the most deadly enemies.
You said they had a sense of humor, Dort. What a joke to play. To deliberately set up a situation where we wouldn't know fact from fantasy, truth from lie. Wouldn't that be a joke, Dort?
Yeah, but we don't know that they did that, sir.
And we don't know that they didn't. We don't know anything.
Sir, does that mean we never go home again?
I don't know. I have to think about it. I have to think about it.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you First Contact, written by Murray Leimster and adapted for radio by Howard Rodman. Featured in the cast were Wendell Holmes, Bob Hastings, Clark Gordon, William Lally, and Stan Early. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Next week at this time, over most of these stations, NBC will present This is Carnegie Hall, a special concert featuring the Symphony of the Air Orchestra.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.